Blog Talk Radio.
Every month to me is Black History Month. But
for my people who've not caught up with us that are moving forward, who's trying to move our people forward, I'm going to honor and respect the fact that they claim that February is Black History Month. So, what we're going to do for the next, for the whole month of February, our shows are going to consist of and be about Black history events, but it's going to be the real Black history. It's not going to be the Black history that they only teach us in our public schools, as in, and I love all these people, but this, for some reason, their history for us is only Dr. Martin Luther King, Harriet Tubman, W.E.B. Du Bois, and President Obama, or they also always claim that it seems like our history only begins at slavery. So what we're going to do for the next few weeks here in the month of February, when we talk about Black history, we're going to talk about the real Black history, the Black history that was written out of the history books, okay? So this is what we're going to do. Like I said, tonight is Super Bowl Sunday, and tonight, till tonight's show, we are going to talk about the history of the Black athlete, how the Black athlete has changed the way sports are played, promoted, and sold, and also, I already said, played in today's world. So we're going to talk about the Black athlete tonight. So this is Dwayne Abernathy. I'm going to take a break. I'll be back in a second. We're going to get to tonight's show. And this is moving forward here on YaiserRadio.com. Peace.
Double M. Flip a Sly Collabo. Let's get it. What he talking about? No, I've been a Roma, but let me call you out. Where you put your crown? You got a little style. Let me put it down until you walking on the cloud. Look, the time's now. I'm intrigued. Whenever I browse, I'll be sure you get things. Yeah, see what I did there? Slip inside of the body until you get there.
I can't lie when I watch my baby. Her lips on spot, just came from the spa. Hair done too, but girl, that was for something. When a guy, people pay for a smile like yours, then I'm loving it, yeah, and now I'm loving it, girl, I swear to God, they'll pay for an ass like yours, if it wasn't there, yeah, yeah, and now I'm rubbing it, I'm rubbing it, oh, oh, you wanna know if we can make this confidential, between me and you, between me and you. Remember when I said I'm trying to find something to get into? I was talking about you. I was talking about you. Yeah, 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 yeah. I can't lie when I watch my baby. Her lip gloss box just came from the spa. Hair done too, but girl, that was for something.
Hello, this is Dwayne Abernathy with 14 Generation Technical Services. In today's world, businesses need a video surveillance camera system. Some of the benefits of installing a camera system are they will improve safety, reduce shrinkage, reduce accidents, increase your bottom line, raise staff accountability, and give your customers a sense of peace. Here at 14 Generations, we specialize in new state-of-the-art technology cloud surveillance systems for restaurants, retail, lodging, offices, and we specialize in daycare centers. In addition to sales, we offer service, maintenance, training, and installation of these customized video surveillance systems. If you would like more information, please contact us at 888-751-8881. Once again, that's 888-751-8881, or log on to 14generations.com. That's the number 14 in the word generations. So once again, that's 14generations.com.
What's up, what's up, what's up, my people? This is your man, Dwayne Abernathy. Listen to Moving Forward here on YaiserRadio.com. Live broadcast, February 2nd, 2014, Super Bowl Sunday. Right now, if you're not watching the Super Bowl, it's actually halftime. But tonight, we are going to have our first installment of Black History. But what we do here at Yaiser Radio like I said, we move our people forward. So we are going to talk about the real black history, the black history that's been removed or from the history books or not even being taught in our schools. Okay. And so since today is like one of the biggest sports events in this country, we're going to talk about the history of the black athlete. Okay. But this is so crazy. How many of you guys out there saw the movie Django? Do you remember the part of the movie Django when they were like the way that they were going to get to Candyland, they were supposed to go in there and make Django seem like that he was pretty much a party promoter. I mean, a fight promoter, like a Don King of the day. And so what they actually used to do is actually have entertainment events happen of Dingo slaves fight against each other. Not only would they fight against each other, they would fight against each other to the death, you know. And it was so crazy part about that. When I was watching the movie Django and I saw that, I was like, well, damn, that's nobody different than damn modern-day LeBron James or us watching the Super Bowl now. Most of the time it's us, my people, out there in the arenas fighting and scrapping and killing and bleeding over each other to entertain the people who have the privileges, you know. And I'm not going straight to race, but you fill in the you fill in the blank if you want to say white people. But think about Django. What was going on in Django is pretty much no different than what's going on in today's professional sports. The big difference, I guess, is you don't really fight to the death, okay? We get that. But if you notice, at the end of the fight, when that guy killed that guy in Django, he was like, well, what do you want? Get him a cold beer. Get him a comfortable place to sleep. Give him some good food. And give him a woman if that was his choice. You get what I'm saying? It's just like we're here to entertain you, and we're going to give you a couple little gifts or a couple little perks, but at the same time, we're not really getting the whole pie. We're getting crumbs of the pie. And so just think about it for a second. When you think about athletes, like you express, think about football. We're talking about football tonight since the Super Bowl Sunday. A lot of these guys, you know, they're making millions of dollars and everything. But have you ever thought about, like, how much money does an owner make? Think about it. If an owner of a team can afford to pay a person $100 million, how much money do you think that they're making off that person? So those are the type of things we're going to talk about tonight when it comes to the black athlete and the history of black athletics. But what I'm going to do, I'm going to take us all the way back to, like, right after the Civil War, because, you know, organized sports really didn't really get real popular in this country until after the Civil War. And so what I'm going to do is go back to, like, one of the first prestigious sports in this country that was big-time moneymaker that also drew big crowds, and that's the sport of horse racing. But the thing about it, if you think about horse racing today, and you hear about horse racing today, they always leave us out of the story of horse racing. So let's talk about like one of the first prestigious sports in this country, and that's horse racing. I'm going to play this clip, and then we're going to get back. We're going to talk more about horse racing. And tonight we're talking about the history of African Americans in American sports. So this is the man, Dwayne Abernethy. You listen to GuysOnRadio.com, and this is Moving Forward.
America was becoming an industrial nation, slowly moving from the farm to the city. Leisure time was now part of the American lifestyle, and sporting events took on a new meaning.
Black people felt that there were two problems with sports. One is that it seemed to be sort of wasting time, or you seemed to be not doing any kind of enterprise that seemed to be moving the race forward. And then two was a problem with you're doing this for white people. I mean, the audience for this is mostly white people.
African Americans were in a state of uncertainty. Many who pursued business endeavors faced fierce opposition by whites. As black Americans struggled to find their place in society, they put to use skills learned on the plantation.
a white slave owner who had a lot of slaves would have a number of slaves who were skilled. And the number of these slaves were, of course, groomers and horse trainers.
1875 was the first year of the Run for the Roses, and it showcased the country's best jockeys. 13 of the 14 jockeys were black.
Black people naturally got involved in sport, dealing with some of the activities they were dealing with on the plantation, horses being one of them.
Well, you take back then, all those jocks come out of riding families. All the grooms come out of grooming families. And all the trainers were handed down. You know, that's the way that went.
So you have black people really dominating a sport like horse racing. And that's how you got a legendary name like Isaac Murphy, who won the Kentucky Derby, I believe, 3 times.
Born in Fayette County, Kentucky, on New Year's Day, Isaac Murphy was the son of a Union Army soldier who had died in a Confederate prison camp. At age 15, Murphy raced in the first Kentucky Derby. He did not win that day, but his career flourished at a time when black jockeys had few peers.
There were trainers. You had plenty of black trainers. Yeah, you had black jocks. You had it all then.
African-American jockeys won 11 of the first 20 Kentucky Derbies. Isaac Murphy made $10,000 a year, almost 10 times the salary of the average white person, a fact that did not sit well with many Americans. Eventually, the jockey club was formed, and blacks were denied licenses to ride. As each year passed, black jockeys slowly disappeared from America's tracks. They left legacies like Isaac Murphy's winning record of 44%, a feat yet to be equaled.
What's up? It's your man, Dwayne Abernathy. You listen to Moving Forward here on YazzaRadio.com. Horse racing. Think about this for a second. It's so funny. I know, like, I live in the South now. Have you guys ever seen the little, they call it the racist little statue that people put into their front yards, the little black jockey, horse jockey guy that holds a little nightlight and everything or whatever? And everybody say that that is a sign of racism. You know what? I know some people go like, okay, Dwayne, you done lost your mind, right? But you know what? I have changed my stance on that little statue because to me, it's, in a way, it's really paying homage to the black jockey because, hell, that's the only damn thing in this country that shows any resemblance that there ever was black jockeys who ever existed. I can guarantee you the average person in this country, black or white, did not know that black jockeys ever existed. But think about it. It only makes sense. That clip that I just played, they just got to the same. And that was one of the battles of this whole country, that the people who built country were us, so that means we were skilled. So since we were skilled, we was able to perform the job that needed to be done. So think about it. They said that most of these ex-slave owners had the old plantations with the horses on there, but the people who tended the horses were what? African-Americans, ex-slaves or descendants of slaves. So that's why you get a person like an Isaac Murphy who was one of the best jockeys of all time. Think about it. They said during the first Kentucky Derby, 13 of the 14 jockeys were black. We ran the sport. We trained the horses. We were the jockeys of the horses. Pretty much we did everything except for own the horses, which, just like in today's sports world, we do all the hard work and labor and everything, but we don't own nothing. But what's so crazy, though, did you know how much money Isaac Murphy was making back in the day? It's like he's making more money than some people make in today's world. But I'm going to give you guys a quick example. I can remember, like I said, I was born and raised, grew up in Indianapolis, Indiana, right, which is like 2 hours north of Louisville, Kentucky, where they had a Kentucky Derby. Us as black people from Indianapolis and also the black people in Louisville, and I guess some of the black people in that surrounding areas like Louisville, St. Louis, Indianapolis, Cincinnati, all used to go, we would all go to Louisville also on the weekend of the Kentucky Derby. But this was the crazy part. By this time, of course, you know, we're talking about the 80s now where there's no black faces that's involved with the Kentucky Derby anymore, period. But what we used to do, it used to be like one of the biggest parties for black folks. This is what we used to do. We all used to go to Kentucky Derby, never went to the horse races, but we used to race motorcycles. It used to be a big festival down over there off of Broadway, down in Louisville, Kentucky. Yes, that lets you know that I've really been there. I can tell you what street. It was on Broadway. And then the park, I can't think of the name of the park, though. But it's so crazy, though. Instead of us being out there in the streets partying and at the race of motorcycles, we should have been at the darn Churchill's Down at the Kentucky Derby, since we are one of the founding creators of the sport of horse racing. That's just so crazy. These are the type of things we get removed from the true history of this country, and that's why we're having this show tonight. But let me see. I'm going to tell you guys a couple of other names of well-known jockeys. We have a Jimmy Winkfield. He was born in 1882 out of Kentucky. He was out of Kentucky. We had another guy. His nickname was Spider. His name was George Anderson. We have this one guy, Ed Dudley Brown. His nickname was Brown Dick. Oh, wow. Anyway, that's another, look, right there, that's another subject for another day, for another show. Another well-known racer, jockey, Alonzo Clayton. His nickname was Lonnie. We have Bob Green. His nickname was Uncle. We have Bud Higgins, Tony Hamilton, Babe. So think about it. Anybody out there, do we even know the history of horse racing? So that lets you know right there, the majority of all the first Kentucky Derbies are all won by black jockeys. That's crazy, people. But that's just giving you guys an insight of what tonight's show is going to be about. We're going to give you the true history of sports in this country that was written out of history, because no one knew about it. I know I didn't know nothing about no Isaac Lewis or George Garrett Lewis or Oliver Lewis. It's like all these people are family members of, they bred jockey members. Like, say, for the father, the grandson, the uncles, all of them were in the horse business that we're no longer a part of in today's world. So if you guys get a chance, go to this website called blackjockeys.org, and it has so much information giving you the names and the history and a timeline of all these great black jockeys of horse racing. But as you always know, what does this country always do? They find a way to bend us from a sport. So the reason why you hardly hear, you don't hear nothing else about us in horse racing anymore, they organized. And you know, when they organize, they get rid of us. And I believe they started an organization called the Horse, what was it called? The Horse Racing Association or whatever. So then at that point, guess what? No blacks allowed in horse racing. All right, this is man Dwayne. I'm taking a break. Tonight we're talking about the history of African Americans and sports in this country. So I'll see you guys in a minute. But once again, if you want to learn more about horse racing, go to blackjockeys.org. I'll be back in a second. You listen to guysatradio.com, and it's your man, Dwayne Abernathy, and this is Moving
now,
Forward.
A special item of news from the JBC Newsroom. Entertainer and reggae star Bob Marley is a now patient in the University Hospital after receiving gunshot wounds during a shooting incident which took place at Marley's home at 56 Hope Road tonight.
Any community, you're going to, it's a problem. Like, you're going to have prison.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Dwayne Abernathy with 14 Generation Technical Services. In today's world, businesses need a video surveillance camera system. Some of the benefits of installing a camera system are they will improve safety, reduce shrinkage, reduce accidents, increase your bottom line, raise staff accountability, and give your customers a sense of peace. Here at 14 Generations, we specialize in new state-of-the-art technology cloud surveillance systems for restaurants, retail, lodging, offices, and we specialize in daycare centers. In addition to sales, we offer service, maintenance, training, and installation of these customized video surveillance systems. If you would like more information, please contact us at 888-751-8881. Once again, that's 888-751-8881. Or log on to 14generations.com. That's the number 14 in the word generations. So once again, that's 14generations.com.
What's up, what's up, what's up? This is your man, Dwayne Abernathy. You listen to Moving Forward here on GeyserRadio.com. Yo, check this out, everybody. First off, I'd like to apologize, you guys, if you logged on to Yizor.com, which is Y-I-Z-Z-O-R, our social network, our news source for our community. There hasn't been any updates in the news on there in the past couple of days, and I want to apologize, you guys. I've been out here on the East Coast, stuck here in Virginia, and I've been out trying to get things accomplished because the whole season was shut down because of the snow. And so I just want to apologize because starting tomorrow, we're going to make sure that we update and have some updated news because there's some things that have been going on, been mad crazy, that we got to make sure that we update Yizor. But also make sure you log on to Yizor.com to get all your updates and news that's going on in the community. Okay, if you're just tuning in, everybody knows tonight is Super Bowl Sunday, and Denver's getting that ass kicked. But we are talking about the African-American athlete. Our input on what's going on in sports in this country. And I started out with horse racing because at one point, horse racing pretty much was like the football of today. It was like the premier sport, okay? Another premier sport back in the day was cycling. Way before your boy, what's the dude's name that used to race in yellow, got one of his nuts cut off? I cannot think of his name. Oh, Lance Armstrong. Before Lance Armstrong, and he, in his tour to France, there used to be black African-American racers in this country that was winning races, of course. Now, you know how the system is. Once we get into a sport, we start shutting the sport down. They try to find a way to shut us down to get us out of the sport. But I'm going to get into the next sport. So I'm kind of like going through the sports in this country that they progressed. Pretty much horse racing was big back in the day. And then cycling was big in the day. We're talking about the early 1900s, like 1908, around that time, and progressing up till today. So what I'm doing, I'm introducing to our listeners out there the first African-American champions of these sports that you would never hear about. Like with me, it was the first time I knew about Isaac Murphy and horse racing. And this next gentleman that I'm about to introduce with cycling, his name is Major Taylor. I've heard of him before, but there's some things about him that I didn't know about. So I'm going to play this clip about the cycler, Major Taylor, here in the United States. We're going to get to Major Taylor. So I'll be back in a second.
Bicycle racing was one of the most popular sports in the country, and Major Taylor was the fastest bicycle rider in the world. For Taylor, racing was exciting and dangerous.
They were racing through a town, and they would go through the main street and then out around the edges of the town, and there were certain groups, and they'd do things like throw broom handles through the spokes or other riders who would try to bunch up and keep him from getting around them.
Taylor rode on to become the American and two-time world cycling champion before he was outlawed from racing in the U.S. by the League of American Wheelmen.
What's up, what's up, what's up? This is your man, Dwayne Abernathy. Major Taylor, I played that short clip just so you could just feel the energy that I felt when I first heard that clip. So I looked up Mr. Major Taylor, His name was really was Marshall Walter Taylor. His nickname was Major Taylor. Hold on, y'all. Breaking news, breaking news. Seattle just scored a touchdown to kick off. Start of halftime of the Super Bowl. Seattle just scored a touchdown. Detroit's getting, not Detroit, Denver's getting the worst pick. 28-0. Anyway, back to calm down, Dwayne. Calm down. Okay. He was born November 26, 1878, and he passed away June 21, 1932. He was an American cyclist who won the World 1 Mile Track Cycling Championship in 1899. After setting numerous world records and overcoming racial discrimination, Taylor was the first African-American athlete to achieve the level of world champion and only the second black man to win the world championship after Canadian boxer George Dixon. This brother was a beast. And I'm going to tell you something, you guys. One reason why I really want to talk about Major Taylor is, one, I have a personal connection to Major Taylor because I, myself, used to be a bicycle racer growing up. I didn't race 10 speed. I used to be a BMX racer. And I can remember I used to be one of the only little African-American kids out there racing in rural Indiana. I mean, my father and I and my cousin Brian can contest to this. We actually used to load up the car on Saturday mornings, and we would drive to different little cities in the state of Indiana, and I would race my BMX bicycle. And I was pretty good, too. And that's why I have a real close connection with Major Taylor, because I love bicycle racing. I love BMX racing especially. And that's why I always say one of these days I will own a racing team. But anyway, another connection that I have with Major Taylor, I was reading over his bio, right? And when he was 13 in 1891, Taylor won his first race as an amateur event in Indianapolis, Indiana. And this is what I'm talking about, people, importance of this show tonight, because me, myself, I'm a lover of sports. I love sports. But for me to know that I raced bicycles growing up in Indianapolis, Indiana, there's nobody that was ever in the tracks I used to go to. There was no one in my family. There's nobody ever talked about sponsorship. Ever educated and told me about a Major Taylor. And then, two, I was in Indianapolis. No one ever mentioned that he even won a race in Indianapolis way back in 1891. This is what I'm talking about. You see how we are written out of history? It's like it's major history that's going on. And for some reason, they just feel that black history only consists of the three people that I mentioned earlier tonight. You know, but we're not harping on it. That's why we have Yizer. That's why you guys have Yizer. That's why I take my time, energy, effort, and money for Yizer so we can give this information out to our people to move us forward. Okay? But of course, Mr. Major Taylor was a very successful bike racer. But guess what? What do they do like they always do when they can't control the athlete? They organize. And people, I want you to think about this word. I said in the first story, the word organize. Do you see how important organizing and organizing together work? Because they organized to shut this man out. So literally, this man had to go overseas to Paris to continue racing. He couldn't even race in his own country because they organized and pretty much banned him from racing in the country. He could not race against Caucasians in this country. The organization called the League of American Wheelmen. They banned this man, champion, born in this country, born, bred American, but they banned him because he was a black man in this country. See, that's what I'm talking about. Major Taylor, much respect, sir. He did a lot for his people, and this is the crazy part, people. You know why he retired? He didn't retire because he didn't have a skill set anymore. He had to retire because he said he got tired of dealing with the racism and cycling. This is your man, Dwayne Abernathy. I am about to take a break. You listen to YazzaRadio.com. And, of course, if you're not watching Super Bowl, the score is now 29-0. I'll be back in a second.
Is that the one fighting for your soul? Or your brother's the one that you're running from? But if you got money, forget the number one.
B.I.G. Oh, God. Whoa. Okay, ain't nobody f***ing with my click, 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 click. Ain't nobody fresher than my mug, mug. Click, 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 click. As I look around, they don't do it like my click, 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 click. And all these bad, bad men, they want to, they want to. Tell a bad bitch, do whatever I say. My block behind me like I'm coming out the driveway. It's grind day from Friday to next Friday. I've been up straight for 9 days, I need a spy day. Yep. She try and give me that Wu-Tang, I might let my crew bang. My crew deep in Wu-Tang, I'm rolling with her. Girl, you know my crew name, you know 2 Chainz. I'm pulling up in that Bruce Wayne, but I'm the feeling, man, they kneeling when I'm walking in the building. Freaky women, I be feeling from the bank accounts, I'm feeling. What a feeling, aw, man, they gotta feel. Young player from the D, that's killing everything that he see, put it go. Click, 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 oh God. Click, click, ain't nobody fresher than my mom, mom. Click, 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 click. As I look around, they don't do it like my click, 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 click. And all these bad, bad men, they want to, they want to, they want to.
Click, clap, pick them up. Yeah, I'm talking, yeah, I'm talking re, yeah, I'm talking B, and I'm talking me, yeah, I'm talking bossy, I ain't talking Khalees, your money too short, you can't be talking to me, yeah, I'm talking LeBron, we ballin' our family tree, good music, drug dealing, cousin, ain't nothing with we, me, turn that 62 to 125, 125 to a 250, 250 to a half a man, ain't nothing nobody could do with me, now who with me, Domino's, call me Hobo Hefe, translation, I'm his, at least that's what my neck say. At least that's what my checks say. Lost my homie for a decade. Break it down for like 12 years. Ain't hugging son since second grade. He never told. Who we gon' tell? We top of the totem pole. It's the dream team. Meets the spring team. And all our eyes winning only means
okay,
one thing. You ain't f***ing with the click.
Click, 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 click. Ain't nobody fresher than my mom, mom. Click, 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 click. As I look around, they don't do it like my click. Click, 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 click. And all these bad, bad men, they want to, they want to, they want to. Break records to Louis, ate breakfast at Gucci. My girl a superstar, all from a home movie. Bow on our arrival to un-American idols. When niggas in pairs, got them hanging off the Eiffel. Yeah, I'm talking business, we talking CIA. I'm talking George Tenet, I seen him the other day. He asked me about my Maybach, think he had the same. Except my tenant and his might have been rented. You know white people.
Hello, this is Dwayne Abernathy with 14 Generation Technical Services. In today's world, businesses need a video surveillance camera system. Some of the benefits of installing a camera system are they will improve safety, reduce shrinkage, reduce accidents, increase your bottom line, raise staff accountability, and give your customers a sense of peace. Here at 14 Generations, we specialize in new state-of-the-art technology cloud surveillance systems for restaurants, retail, lodging, offices, and we specialize in daycare centers. In addition to sales, we offer service, maintenance, training, and installation of these customized video surveillance systems. If you would like more information, please contact us at 888-751-8881. Once again, that's 888-751-8881, or log on to 14generations.com. That's the number 14 in the word generations. So once again, that's 14generations.com.
What's up, what's up, what's up? This is your man, Dwayne Abernathy. You listen to Moving Forward here on YazzaRadio.com. And we back from my quick little break. Looks like we have a caller that called in. I didn't put the number out for a guest to call in, but if we have our listeners calling in, we want to see what they have to say. So let me bring this caller on and see what they have to say. Hey, what's going on, caller? This is your man, Dwayne, with YazzaRadio.com. How can I help you tonight? We got a comment on tonight's topic.
Just overall, I just want to say this is a great topic to bring in Black History Month, especially with the Super Bowl and everything, and everything that we're seeing presently in the media, and how African Americans are representing themselves, I think, more than ever in the media. I think it's really good to have a positive outlet for our future generations and everything. I think it's really uplifting and informative. So I just wanted to say that keep up the good work.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Carla. Thank you for the compliment and everything. Are you watching the game tonight?
Yes, I am.
Or was you just watching the game to see of halftime? Or are you a real football fan?
No. It's more like a holiday and a tradition in my household.
Okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'm not really personally into football.
All right, then. Well, thank you for calling in. But if you might, continue to listen to the show tonight, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Have a good night. Bye.
You too.
What's up, what's up, what's up? Thanks, man. Man, see, I love our callers. I'm so glad that we have our listeners out there. They call in. And anybody else who want to call in and you want to talk crazy about Peyton Manning, you can give us a call at 347-884-8705. If you didn't know, of course, I'm rooting for Seattle. Anyway, we're moving forward. Tonight's show, we're talking about the history of African Americans in sports. And pretty much I'm going through a timeline of the growth of this country right after the Civil War. And, of course, you know, back in those days, you know, in the early 1900s, you know, we started out with horse racing. We talk about cycling and bike racing. But now we got to get into boxing. Everybody loves boxing. Well, let me rephrase that. Everybody used to love boxing. Today, boxing is kind of dead. You know, I think the UFC has taken over the sport of violence. I just call boxing, call it what it is. It's a violent sport. So the sport of violence, but like all other sports, once we get in there, we lock it down, we hold it down. But this is my biggest issue about all of this. We don't own none of this ish. We don't own, we get into the sport, and we dominate the sports, but we don't own the sport. But I am going to talk about a sport that we used to own, so there might be some hope for us. But anyway, right now we're talking about boxing, right? And we all know the great heavyweights of the new era boxing. We know, we all know about the Mike Tysons and the Evander Holyfields and, of course, the all-time greatest, my brother, Assalamu alaikum, Muhammad Ali. Of course, before they try to call him Cassius Clay, I can remember watching a documentary on Muhammad Ali, and he made them call him Muhammad. The one boxer, I think it was, what was his name? It was the brother. I can't think of his name right now, but he was like, I'm not calling you Muhammad Ali. I'm calling you Cassius Clay. I'm calling you by your government name. I'm calling you by your slave name. He said, you know what? I'm going to beat the ish out of you until you call me Muhammad Ali. So anyway, but before Muhammad Ali, there was Jack Johnson.
And also was commonly believed by many white people that black people were going to die out.
America was divided as never before. White America had suffered the prowess of blacks in many sports. But the sport of sports, boxing, was still a white man's domain. The greatest white boxers had always refused to fight blacks. But now a new black man was on the scene. He was brash and self-confident, and he could back it up with his fists. His name was Jack Johnson. Considered a great defensive fighter, Johnson made his way in the boxing world by fighting in California, where boxing was big business. By 1907, Johnson had defeated all major black challengers, like Sam Langford and Joe Jeanette. He set his sights on the real prize, the heavyweight championship of the world.
Title means a great deal to people because it's sort of like your Mr. American manhood or something. And the idea that a black would be the most idealized man in the United States bothered a lot of people.
Lacking white competition, the beloved heavyweight Jim Jeffries retired a champion. Eventually, a short Canadian named Tommy Burns took the title. Burns was in no hurry to fight Johnson either, and he avoided him.
Jack Johnson had chased Tommy Burns to Australia, where a promoter offered Burns $30,000 to fight Johnson. Burns couldn't receive this type of money fighting a white fighter, so he agreed.
On December 26, 1908, Johnson got his chance.
The belief was that blacks physically were hard-headed and weak in the stomach. Now, Jack Johnson realized this, and so he exposed his stomach. And he kept saying, "Go ahead, hit me, Tommy." And Burns kept trying, and of course, it was hopeless.
Burns was no match for Johnson, and in the 14th round, Johnson knocked Burns out. The camera stopped rolling just short of Burns hitting the canvas. Many Americans said the fight should never have happened. With the victory, Johnson became bolder than ever, flaunting his title and his women.
He was a man whose sex life had suddenly become public. He was a man who was reviled and hated by white people. It was all political. It was all simply that a white man must be heavyweight champion. We can't stand the idea of a black being heavyweight champion.
Almost immediately, the call went out for a great white hope. The reporter Jack London spoke for many Americans.
But one thing now remains. Jim Jeffries must now emerge from his alfalfa farm and remove that golden smile from Jack Johnson's face. Jeff, it's up to you. The white man must be rescued.
Overweight and out of shape, Jeffries declined to fight Johnson, but the call grew louder. After 2 years, Jeffries finally agreed. Promoter Tex Rickard built a stadium in Reno, Nevada to hold the fight.
Reno was beyond the pale anyway. Reno is gambling. Reno is drinking. Reno is prostitution. Reno is the hometown for sports throughout America. The perfect place for the fight. And as the fight drew closer and closer, attention throughout America builds.
Gamblers, prize fighters, and aristocrats descended upon Reno, forcing the frontier settlement to become a big city almost overnight. America was focused on this desert town in Nevada. A superstitious man, Johnson entered the ring first. The fight of the century was about to begin.
I was 9 years old. They had this fight that was going on someplace, I don't know, remember where it was, but I do know that Jack Johnson was fighting Jeffries. The young boys had come out on the bicycles from Western Union to bring the rounds, you know.
By round 15, Jeffries was bleeding and swollen. Johnson had victory at hand. As he piled up points, the only person seen rooting for him was his wife, Etta Duryea. With each punch landed, Johnson chipped away at the ideals of the nation. Never again would the heavyweight title be only the white man's domain.
And when the fight ended, it was just silence. Nobody cheered. People filtered out of the stadium as if it was a wake, as if they were mourning the passing of something, which they were.
When they said that he had knocked out, that Jack Johnson knocked out Jeffries, well, the place was just in an uproar. Everybody was so happy.
As soon as the fight ended, the riots began.
Invariably, blacks were killed. In New York, throughout the South, in cities large and small, and they would just attack. White mobs would attack blacks.
Johnson returned to Chicago. His drinking and carousing increased. Often short on cash, he fought any great white hope sent his way. Openly taunting his challenges, Johnson's showboating was considered a bad example for the nation's Negroes. The FBI launched a movement to rid the country of the champ. 1 month after Jeffries' defeat, Judge Kennesaw Mountain Landis charged Johnson with transporting white women across state lines for immoral purposes. Found guilty, Johnson fled the country. When he returned years later, he returned not as a champion, rather as a criminal.
Okay. I've heard of the Jack Johnson story before. I'm a lover of fan boxing. But how tragic of a story is that? Now think about this for a second. We are described all the time as mob, thugs, criminals. But when's the last time that you heard of a mob of black people going out killing white people because we lost a game in a sport? That's the tragic story of Mr. Johnson here. This man won, Mr. Jack Johnson. Let me say his whole name, Mr. Jack Johnson, because I want all of our listeners out there to hear me clearly. Jack Johnson is the first African-American heavyweight champion in this country. And it's not because he couldn't have been the champion before. He just had to fight his way up to prove that he needs a chance to be the champ. But the crazy part about it, the country automatically made this into a race issue. It had nothing to do with sport. And that's what I'm trying to explain to you guys tonight, that sports has always been a racial issue in this country. That sports has always been one of those things where they felt like, you know what, we dominate these sports, these extracurricular activities and everything, and there's no way you guys are talented enough or smart enough to get into our sports. But then once we get involved with the sport, we dominate the sport. So Mr. Jack Johnson finally gets a chance to fight for the heavyweight championship of the world, not of the country, but of the world, and they turn this into a division of race called an old, fat, retired champion out to save the white race. Are you serious? How the hell does that sound? We need you to come and save the race. It's a freaking boxing match. Okay? The dude came out of retirement and got his ass kicked. So at that point, does that mean that the race dies off? No. Instead, they decided they want to riot and go around killing black folks because that lazy boxer got his ass kicked by Jack Johnson. Do you guys remember the Rodney King verdict? Yes, I'm going back to the Rodney King verdict. And I don't agree with our people going out rioting and burning down your own properties. But technically, if you look at it, they did it for a purpose or a cause because of injustice, because there was a black man beat up by the LAPD and it's caught on video and the dude gets off. But these folks were looking around the country killing black folks and burning down black folks' houses over a boxing match. Come on, man. You tell me who's the savages. Anyway, come on. Sorry, you guys. I watched the game, too, live. This live radio, so you know this is what we do. Anyway, Jack Johnson. So, look, Jack Johnson, I think he only got, like, $6,000. You know, that's a lot of money back in the day. Hell, I need $6,000 right now. But anyway, of course, they didn't respect him as a champion, so back then there was no endorsements or nothing like that, so he pretty much became like a circus act. But look, this is his downfall. This subject right here is a subject for another day, for another show. The FBI people, Federal Bureau of Investigation, investigated the champion, the heavyweight champion, for transporting white women over state line for immoral purposes. I didn't know it was a damn law for that. Crazy part about it, it probably wasn't. They just made it up. So this guy became a fugitive from the country that he was a heavyweight champion of. Such a tragic story. Jack Johnson. You know, so he left the country. I think he left the country for like 3-4 years or whatever. When he came back, he did redeem himself. He did win the championship or whatever, but he always had a trouble for the rest of his life because of dealing with white women. But we're not getting into that tonight. We're talking about African-Americans in sports. This is your man, Dwayne Abernathy. We're going to move forward. We're going to get on to our next sport. And if you just tuned in tonight, we are talking about the history of the African-American athlete. And we're talking about the athletes that were written out of history. Okay, these are the guys who changed the sport as we knew it. But this is your man, Dwayne. I'll be back in a second. You listen to GuysOfRadio.com.
And what do I get?
I need a little reverb.
A daughter! Who cares as much about the beautiful dresses I give her as she cares about me?
Let's do this for these babies. Mercedes, truck, up, houses on acres. Blakey ballin' on HD. Y'all need to step up your AV. Life changed again, I was already taking off. My flight changed again, flight change wins. It's barely 12 noon and my wife changed again. Baby needs pampers. Daddy need at least 3 weeks in the Hamptons. Please don't judge me. Only hug the block, I thought my daddy didn't love me. My baby getting chubby. Cue that Stevie Wonder music, oh, isn't she lovely? Now I'm staring at her, praying that things don't get ugly. And I'm stuck in that old cycle of life, wife, please hug me. Oh, joint custody. I need a joint right now, just to start a long oath with me. High on life. I could die from the fall, imagine if I hit the floor. Apologies in order, the blue ivy, my daughter. If it was up to me, you would be with me. Short of life, daddy, dearest.
My first time at the rodeo.
I dream filthy.
My mom and pops
mix me with Jamaican
rum and whiskey.
What a set off. And I know I'm not perfect, baby. I've been so much trauma. Gonna be hard to reverse it with some doctors and some nurses, maybe. Teach me how to treat a lady. Open doors on the ladies. This relationship is just complicated. All I know.
Hello, this is Dwayne Abernathy with 14 Generation Technical Services. In today's world, businesses need a video surveillance camera system. Some of the benefits of installing a camera system are they will improve safety, reduce shrinkage, reduce accidents, increase your bottom line, raise staff accountability, and give your customers a sense of peace. Here at 14 Generations, we specialize in new state-of-the-art technology cloud surveillance systems for restaurants, retail, lodging, offices, and we specialize in daycare centers. In addition to sales, we offer service, maintenance, training, and installation of these customized video surveillance systems. If you would like more information, please contact us at 888-751-8881. Once again, that's 888-751-8881, or log on to 14generations.com. That's the number 14 in the word generations. So once again, that's 14generations.com.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. He shoots. It's a three-pointer. Anyway, we're about to talk about basketball. If you're just tuning in, we're going through the history of sports in the United States and what African-American athletes have contributed to these sports. We got to move on to b-ball, baby. We're moving through. If you're just tuning in, we've already talked about horse racing. We talked about cycling. We talked about boxing. Now let's talk about basketball. And it's so funny. Once again, you know what? I'm going to be honest with you guys. I'm born and raised in Indianapolis, Indiana. And I'm always, people say I'm always dissing my hometown. I like my hometown. I just can't live in my hometown. But this is the thing. a lot of the sports that I talk about and a lot of things that have to do with sports has something to do with my hometown. Either their headquarters is there, like the NCAA. That's going to be a whole nother subject. I can't wait to talk about the NCAA. But their headquarters is in Indianapolis. I talked about Isaac Murphy earlier. He won his first race in Indianapolis. You have the Indianapolis 500. Mike Tyson, one of the best champions of boxing, gets locked up in Indianapolis, Indiana. I mean, it's like Indianapolis. So now we're going to talk about basketball, okay? And then when I get back from playing this clip on basketball, I'm going to tell you guys the role that Indianapolis played in basketball. So let's talk about basketball.
In the less popular sport of basketball, the Depression destroyed the organized league. The only way to survive was to play any team, black or white. All takers were welcome, anything to stay alive. The most successful were the Renaissance Big Five, the Wrens, and the original Celtics.
The Wrens and the Celtics were not afraid to play off of what they knew was the fans' anticipation of a white team beating a black team or a black team beating a white team.
Robert Douglas fulfilled his dream when he formed the Wrens. They were the black team to beat.
We wanted Duncan because Duncan hadn't been thought of about that time. But the ball handler per se was very exceptional.
The ultimate run, Pat Jenkins was like a blur. You know, the man would steal the ball from him before he'd get halfway down the court. Jenkins had overtaken him and gotten the ball back and came flying back up the court.
That was our forte: speed, good ball handling, good ball passing, and perfect defense.
Skill was not enough. Basketball teams had to go to the fans to make a living.
Barnstorming was an experience in its own. I was from the North, and things that happened below the cotton curtain was something that you had to learn to deal with.
Imagination also helped to bring in the fans. Originally a serious basketball team, Abe Saperstein's Harlem Globetrotters barely survived. But as their antics became their game, they became stars.
A lot of people have a misconception. They thought the Trotters couldn't play. He's supposed to play. But they found out it was more advantageous to them to do what they did.
White audiences and the white media was being drawn much more to the Globetrotters, giving them more accolades, because it fit, again, this white stereotype of what black people were supposed to be like.
Other teams relied on serious competition to bring in the fans. Over time, the Wrens and Celtics developed a friendship that only respect and mutual dependence could foster.
It was a friendship of knowing each other and a warm friendship of trying to beat the other dude that's trying to beat you. And we all respect each other for that, because that's what the ball game was all about.
The Wrens became two-time world champions, yet officially considered only Negro champs. When the season ended, their success on the court was not enough to carry them throughout the year.
Well, you got first-class basketball, like I said. You had to put some grips on the table. You better hurry up and get yourself a job. You had to worry about paying Mr. Charlie at the end of the month, paying your rent and so forth, things like that.
Here were guys that played at the top of the game who were, in several cases, inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame, became painters, became bus drivers, became cab drivers, and the one who became a New York City policeman went off duty and called to a burglary scene when the white cop, uniform cops arrived, gunned him down because they thought he was the burglar.
What's up? It's your man, Dwayne Abernathy. You know what? I got to apologize to my listeners tonight. I'm super watching the Super Bowl, and I'll be honest with you, I'm keeping it real. I literally forgot that the clip went off. I'm watching Seattle just score another touchdown. The score is now 36-0. It's like I'm loving this because everybody, Rod, Peyton Manning, Jock, and guess what? It's all over, baby. The party's over. 36-0, player. Anyway. Basketball. We all love b-ball. But of course, like all the rest of the sports, we all got to earn our keep. But the crazy part about it, basketball was a sport that was, like, broke. I mean, they were struggling to even get black players, white players to play against each other in basketball. So it really wasn't no discrimination until money got involved. And it's so funny, one of the oldest teams of basketball in this country, the three oldest teams technically is the Harlem Globetrotters, which now, of course, is like more of a novelty act. It's so funny. My son and his grandfather, they go to see the Harlem Globetrotters every year. I keep saying I'm going to go one of these years, but I'm always on the road. That's no excuse. I got to make sure I'm there. The next team is the Boston Celtics. And believe it or not, Boston is a town that's full of racism, but their basketball team always has supported the African-American athlete. Other team, this team was like, say, for instance, if you had to compare them with today's basketball, they were the Miami Heat of their time, and that was the Rens, the R-E-N-S. They were like the best basketball team of, like, say, for instance, the so-called skilled, organized basketball. You know, Harlem Globetrotters more like a street ball, but the Rens played the more organized sports, like against Boston and teams like that. And this team would win back-to-back championships, but they would never get any respect because why? For African-American team. But I'm going to tell you guys some history of basketball. And I keep telling you, my city, Indianapolis, always in the story. If you guys ever heard of Oscar Robertson, which Oscar Robertson also is one of the all-time great players of NBA basketball. Well, Oscar Robertson went to a high school in Indianapolis called Crispus Attucks High School. Crispus Attucks was the first and only all-black high school in Indianapolis, okay? Actually, I'm going to tell you guys another funny, too. Crispus Attucks was actually built by the KKK. The Grand Wizard of the KKK was like, say for instance, I don't think he was the governor, but he was like some big political figure in the state of Indiana. And the KKK actually put the funds up to build Crispus Attucks High School, but that's another topic for another day on another show. Anyway, Oscar Robertson. Well, in 1955 and in 1956, Crispus Attucks was the first all-black team to win an Indiana State title. Okay? State basketball. Best team. He was Mr. Basketball in 1956. Everything. I mean, this team was off the chain. But check this out, you guys. Here we go. When we talk about sports, everybody's supposed to love sports. But sports has had some of the biggest races of moments than any other, pretty much almost any other activity in this country. Sports. Sports was supposed to be something for entertainment to bring people together. But no, sports in this country separated people. And racism always showed its ugly head. So check this out. In Indianapolis, Indiana, it's called the Circle City. When you go to downtown Indianapolis or whatever, there's this monument down there. It's called Monument Circle. That's why it's called a Circle City. But one of the traditions in the city was when the high school team of the state wins the championship, the city, the state gives them this big, huge parade, and everybody goes downtown Indianapolis on a circle and all this stuff or whatever, right? Don't you know, when Oscar Robertson and them won the championship in 1955, there was no parade. There was no celebration. It was nothing. And it's so funny. My father-in-law went to high school with them. My father-in-law went to Crispus Attucks. And it's amazing to sit down and talk to black elderly African-Americans in Indianapolis, and they tell this story because the whole community, they came together on Indiana Avenue. Indiana Avenue used to be like this prestigious area for African-Americans in Indianapolis, but they had a big celebration for them down there off of Indiana Avenue, and Crispus Attucks is right there by Indiana Avenue. But the city, the state, no celebration at all. And now look at basketball now. Multi-billion-dollar industry built off the backs of young African-American players. You do the math, baby. That's what I'm talking about. I don't even want to get into basketball so much because we understand. We have made strides, yes. We have made them billions of dollars. I get that. Even now, we even have Michael Jordan and a couple other African Americans who are. They're not primary owners of these teams. I don't know. I think Jordan might be a primary owner, but if he is, it's just one. But you would think if we dominate a sport like basketball that we will own a team all out, but we don't. But when I get back, this next sport that I'm going to talk about, I call this sport, I have nicknamed this sport the Great Giveaway. And you're probably like, Dwayne, what the hell is the Great Giveaway? Well, let me rephrase it. I call it our Big Giveaway because there wasn't nothing great about this giveaway. So the next sport I'll talk about when I get back from this break is the Great Giveaway sport. This is your man, Dwayne Abernathy Lewis. So moving forward here on GeyserRadio.com.
Hello, this is Dwayne Abernathy with 14 Generation Technical Services. In today's world, businesses need a video surveillance camera system. Some of the benefits of installing a camera system are they will improve safety, reduce shrinkage, reduce accidents, increase your bottom line, raise staff accountability, and give your customers a sense of peace. Here at 14 Generations, we specialize in new state-of-the-art technology cloud surveillance systems for restaurants, retail, lodging, offices, and we specialize in daycare centers. In addition to sales, we offer service, maintenance, training, and installation of these customized video surveillance systems. If you would like more information, please contact us at 888-751-8881. Once again, that's 888-751-8881, or log on to 14generations.com. That's the number 14 in the word generations. So once again, that's 14generations.com.
It's good. It's good. It's good. It's a grand slam. Baseball. You know, it's so funny. A lot of people don't even like baseball anymore. Heck, if you even watch baseball now, I don't even think we even play baseball anymore. I think you could probably name the African-American players in Major League Baseball now on one hand. But anyway, did you guys know that baseball – it used to be our sport. It wasn't basketball. It wasn't football. It was baseball. Baseball literally was our sport. And this we're going to talk about baseball, but I call baseball our big giveaway. Involved in the conversation of baseball and why I call it our big giveaway. What I'm going to do, I'm going to play the clip first and give you guys a little history on African Americans, on how we dominated this sport. And we dominated the sport of baseball. And the crazy part about it, they always talk about Jackie Robinson. You know what's so funny? This is another part of outside the big giveaway of the sport. That's also the big lie of the sport. Did you guys know that Jackie Robinson really was not the first African American baseball player to play major league baseball? actually, where was this? Let me get my dates together here. Back in 1800s? Back in the 1800s, there was over 50 black players in Major League Baseball. Right after the Civil War in 1867, 2 years after, it was actually 1878, John W. Bud Fowler, F-O-W-L-E-R, actually was the first African-American player in Major League Baseball, okay? He was born in where? Cooperstown, New York, where the Hall of Fame of Baseball is, where the sport pretty much had his claim to fame. There was a brother right there in the mix, but they cut him out of history, like they always do. Then they shut the sport down, I think, for like, 50, 60, maybe 70 years, before you even get a so-called Jackie Robinson. So all that hype about number 42 is, once again, it's the history that they want us to know. It's the history that they want to tell us. But I'm here at YaiserRadio.com to teach you guys the true, real history of us, the real, true history of African-Americans in sport. So now let's talk about baseball.
The most renowned heroes of the black sporting world were the men who took part in the All-American pastime. Originally formed in the 20s by premier pitcher Rube Foster, the National Negro League flourished and then died as the Great Depression took hold of America. By the early 1930s, the country was in despair. Bread lines were commonplace, and economic opportunity was a scarce commodity. The Depression hit hardest in the black neighborhoods, where it was already tough to get a break or get a job. But the self-reliance movement begun by segregation and fostered during the Renaissance led to the rebirth of the Negro Leagues.
1932, we played the first recognized black World Series, Yankee Stadium. We had 47,000. We played the New York Lincoln Giants. Satchel Paige pitched the first game and I caught him. In the seventh inning, I hit a home run in the upper deck with the bases loaded and drove in 4 runs and we beat him.
The biggest rivalry was between the team owned by Gus Greenlee, the Pittsburgh Crawfords, and the Homestead Grays, owned by Cum Posey.
Gus only knew people in the rackets. Cum himself out in Homestead where he lived, he was on the school board, he was a councilman. The two were just different.
Homestead is right outside of Pittsburgh. Over there, they had some of the best ball players in the league. There are fellows like Josh Gibson and Buck Leonard and those kind of people, you know. And they were a rivalry. We played 4 games a day. You ever heard of that? We'd be 9:45 in the morning, 1:45, then get in the bus, go 50 miles down to Virginia, cross the line and play. When we get back home, go to bed, it's 5 o'clock. And my wife would fix me a steak or some pork chops or something. When I wake up the next morning, they're still on the table. I just went to sleep and left it. So tired.
The owners kept their teams alive by a part-time schedule of games against other league members and by barnstorming, traveling around the countryside playing against hometown teams in the north and the south.
They just had these old rickety buses ride in because Jim Crow trains were not for these players.
Sometime you'd be in a town down south in Alabama or Mississippi, they'd want you to go in the back of a restaurant and sit on a box and eat. And some of the boys had too much pride, they wouldn't do it. And if you pick up the hose to drink some water, you say, put them hose down, nigga, white folks will get you a Coca-Cola bottle. It was awful. We took a beating. But if we don't keep playing, they wouldn't be playing today.
You know, there was an accommodation that we as a people learned to make to that sort of thing. When you can't do anything about something, you make it a stepping stone for something else that makes you happy.
in black baseball, you had a business that involved only people of color. The ball clubs were African-American. The owners were African-American. The sites where they played were African-American in the main. At that time, the only other businesses we had that was run by black people were a few newspapers and insurance companies. This is the one phase of sports that they owned and dictated how the game was to be run.
Despite the hardship of the times, the players of the Negro Leagues were becoming legends in the black communities where they played.
I didn't know anything about Major League Baseball. There was no blacks in baseball. There was no talk about blacks ever getting a chance to play in baseball. I like Buck Leonard and Josh Gibson, you know.
The most colorful character of all was a tall, self-assured pitcher named Satchel Paige.
Now you're talking about something. You'd never be no more like him, I don't think. We used to call everybody off the field but me and him. And as fast as they come up there, he'd mow them down.
People saying that you could make the ball look like a pea. He could make the ball look smaller than anybody I ever faced. He threw hard.
I could throw pretty straight. I couldn't. I came up from down in Mobile when I was throwing rocks like you heard them say. I could throw rocks straight. I used to kill birds with rocks. There's no maybe so about it.
A Judy Johnson, a Jimmy Crutchfield, and Double Duty Radcliffe to see him pitch a game in the morning, then catch one in the afternoon. And Oscar Owens, my favorite, 150-pounder for the Homestead Grays, who could pitch five innings with his left hand and the next four innings with his right hand, all in the same game. And don't you think people didn't turn out to see that?
The Negro Leagues provided something to look forward to in these hardest of hard times. At the depth of the Great Depression, they staged the rivalry of rivalries, the East-West All-Star Classic. Held in August each year, became so popular that even the white press covered the game.
First year we played, we draw 19,000. That was nothing. The next year we draw 43. Then we went up to 57,000. You back to me.
The ladies used to come to the ballpark all dressed up like they come from church or something, you know.
I can remember how exciting it was. Yes, it was an exciting time.
And the games were always good. 2-1, 4-3, never 6-0, never 10-0. Very, very close games.
African Americans took pride in their teams, and they were proudest when their idols played against the white major leaguers.
We played the Yankee Stadium on a Friday night and a Sunday afternoon. When I pitched against Satchel Paige, and we had two great ball games. They won one, we won one. We had over 100,000 people in Yankee Stadium for those two ball games.
I got to see all these ball players in action. Ted Williams and Ty Cobb, and I got to see them, and I also had an opportunity to see the Negro League players. And it said to me that here's something wrong.
Anybody played in our league could have played in that league. That's the way I felt, you know, because when we started barnstorming with them, we ran them all over the country, so much so that their commissioner stopped them from playing us.
Kennesaw Mountain Landis prohibited play between the two teams because barnstorming games competed with Major League games. And so the ban on admittance of blacks into the white majors continued. And to much of white America, the National Negro League remained unknown.
What's up, what's up, what's up? What's up, what's up, people? Baseball. The big giveaway. Baseball, once again, America's sport. American sport. Baseball was a sport that we dominated, but this is the part where I say it's the big giveaway. You know what? I got a two-minute clip that's going to explain why I call this the big giveaway. Then I'm going to get back because we have 33 minutes left. We got to get into the football because tonight's Super Bowl, but tonight's history has been made in football tonight, so big giveaway. Quick two-minute clip, and I'm going to tell y'all why.
Back in the house with my panel talking about the $40 million slaves that are today's black athletes. Dr. Moore, I want to go to you first because I wanted to bring up Jackie Jackie Robinson, I'd be remiss in neglecting to bring him up before I ended this show. Jackie Robinson, some people were saying, your book intimated, somebody in the book intimated, that bottom line is this. Jackie Robinson integrating Major League Baseball basically killed the Negro League. And before I get your response, let me play something from Buck O'Neill. He was on this show. Buck O'Neill, this is what he had to say about Jackie Robinson integrating baseball.
What had happened, it killed Negro League Baseball. Well, it actually, it shouldn't have been Negro League Baseball, no way. The only reason it was Negro League Baseball, they wouldn't let us play Major League. So we organized a league of our own, which was a great league. And see, Hollywood wants you to think that Negro League was something. Negro League was the third largest black business in this country.
Dr. Moore, you heard that. What are your thoughts about that, especially looking at today's athletes and the fact that you believe, we all believe, they refuse to mobilize as much as they can, you know, to empower themselves? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it's sad, man. When, you know, I take my wife and children to an LSU football game or to a sporting event when I go home to Cleveland, and the crowd is 99% white. And it, many of us don't realize it now, but Negro League Baseball, the owners were...
Baseball. Negro League Baseball. Third largest African-American business. Did you hear that? Did you hear the first clip I played about baseball, African-American baseball? 100,000 attendees when they played against the Yankees. And we gave it away. We gave it away. Why? So we can say Jackie Robinson's the first black player in Major League Baseball, which is a lie. This is what I'm talking about, people. We have to stop giving our ish away. We own baseball. We own the teams. We own the players. We own the concession stands. We are on the baseball fields. We own the buses that the players traveled on. We own the sport. And today, we don't even exist in baseball. This is what I'm talking about. And that's what I'm going to talk about. Before this month's over, I'm going to talk about this so-called civil rights movement. Did you guys know there actually was another movement? And the civil rights movement canceled it out? It was called the self-reliance movement. Did you guys know that there was a self-reliance movement in our community? Why? Because we were banned from sports. We were banned from hotels. We were banned from restaurants. So guess what? We created our own. Our own. And then guess what? No, let's segregate. Let's take our money of our community and give it to somebody else. Baseball, we owned it. We owned it, the big giveaway. Baseball. That's why I really don't watch baseball now. Screw baseball. Matter of fact, us, for allowing them to take baseball from us. They didn't, you know what? They didn't take it from us. We gave it to them. Thank you, Jackie Robinson. Thank you, number 42. I'm done with baseball. I'll be back in a second. We're taking a break. Tonight, history's been made. Super Bowl. We're going to talk about football. We're going to end the show with football because today is Super Bowl Sunday, but I had to let you guys know about baseball, man. That's why baseball is so whack now, because they know that they stole it from us, and we know that we let them steal it from us. And that's why nobody even watches baseball anymore. But you know what? It is what it is. Be back in a second. It's your man, Dwayne, you listening, moving forward here on GuysAndRaiders.com, and the score is 43-8 in the Super Bowl.
Escalade with a made man in it. Rose gold shades with the rose lenses. Pink champagne in the flow so endless. All I seek is perfection. Ain't no secrets, I'ma eat that for breakfast. Keep her close to me like lyrics she spoke to me. In the middle of the winter, summer, let her close to me.
All these stars out and these people know my name. I can be so pretentious, but he likes.
Hello, this is Dwayne Abernathy with 14 Generation Technical Services. In today's world, businesses need a video surveillance camera system. Some of the benefits of installing a camera system are they will improve safety, reduce shrinkage, reduce accidents, increase your bottom line, raise staff accountability, and give your customers a sense of peace. Here at 14 Generations, we specialize in new state-of-the-art technology cloud surveillance systems for restaurants, retail, lodging, offices, and we specialize in daycare centers. In addition to sales, we offer service, maintenance, training, and installation of these customized video surveillance systems. If you would like more information, please contact us at 888-751-8881. Once again, that's 888-751-8881, or log on to 14generations.com. That's the number 14 in the word generations. So once again, that's 14generations.com.
What's up? It's your man, Dwayne Abernathy. You listen to Moving Forward here on guysonradio.com. I cut that last break kind of short because I want to talk about football. We only had 27 minutes left. And, of course, everybody knows the news of the Super Bowl this year. Sherman, who plays for Seattle Seahawks, he just got hurt, man. Dang, I hope he's not out for next season. Anyway, tonight's Super Bowl Sunday, but we are talking about the history of African-Americans in sports and show you guys how racism plays such a big role in sports in this country. And I took you guys all the way back right outside of the Civil War. One thing I left out, too, when we talked about basketball, and I want to say something about the Boston Celtics. Boston has had a history of a lot of racism. But Boston also has played a major role in basketball when it comes to African-American players, especially Bill Russell. Bill Russell actually was the first African-American coach and player of the Boston Celtics. So when he played for Boston, he was a coach and he was also a player, you know. And the crazy part about it, too, they won a championship while he was a coach of Boston. I just want to get a little side note when it comes to basketball in Boston. I left that out earlier. Anyway, we're about to talk about football because tonight is Super Bowl Sunday. I talked about baseball. Baseball can be over. Anyway, we're talking about football now. But I have a Super Bowl trivia question for you guys. The black quarterback, did you guys know there was a time in this country? Well, there's always a time in this country where they always say the African-American is not smart enough to do something. But don't you know that there's a time that the black quarterback, you would never hardly find a black quarterback because they would say that we weren't smart enough to be a quarterback? Okay, I'm going to play a clip. Let's go talk about the very first black quarterback, and he was also the very first coach in the NFL, okay? But then I'm going to ask you guys, I got a question, trivia question for you guys, and I'm going to ask you guys right now, who was the very first black quarterback to win a Super Bowl, and what team did he play for? Then my next question after that is, who was the second black quarterback to win a Super Bowl? This is the Super Bowl football.
Yeah,
I'll be back in a second.
I was a kid. Well, we want you to go with Paul Robeson, you know, I mean, Paul Robeson was right there with W.E.B. Du Bois. I don't know of any other black athlete who is quite seen in that way as Paul Robeson is, as this kind of quintessential scholar athlete.
In the 20s, Paul Robeson was scoring points on the American stage. His versatility allowed him to play Othello or sing in concert. But his career actually began by making touchdowns on the field. After attaining the highest marks ever achieved on the New Jersey High School exam, Robeson entered Rutgers University in 1915 on an academic scholarship. That same year, Frederick Douglass Pollard entered Brown University. As the only black members of their teams, playing the game held special challenges.
They called me all the niggas in the world. But I kept on making long runs and didn't get laid out and whatnot, so they just stopped.
Pollard played in the very first Rose Bowl game and was the first black running back named to Walter Camp's All-American list. He slowly gained the respect of his teammates, and they did what they could to ensure he would be able to play.
They wouldn't allow me to have a place to change my clothes. I had to change my clothes in the cigar store. And I had to get a cab and with two or three white fellas and go from there
and the Brown team went out there, and I had to go after just 3 or 4 or 5 minutes before they blew the whistle. And I had it, we had it all figured out.
Pollard went on to become the first African-American quarterback and head coach in professional football. As coach of the Akron Pros, he was highly regarded, especially by his one black player, Paul Robeson. Eventually, the NFL would ban blacks, and regardless of his winning record, Fritz Pollard would be out of a job. It would take over 50 years before the NFL would have its second black head coach.
What's up? Fritz Pollard, that was his actual, I played that clip because I want you guys to hear his voice. That was actually him, very first African-American quarterback and coach. Listen to me, quarterback and coach. Back in, when was he the player? When was it? Was it? I know it's on here. Oh, crap. I had it written down. Hold on, my people. I want to say 1946. Anyway, I'm gonna tell you guys the date in a second, but did you hear what he said? He said, I was called all kind of niggers. Could you imagine? How about my people out there listening? How many of you right now could go to work? Right. Imagine you at work doing your skill, your trade, and somebody's yelling at you, nigger, nigger. Do you think you could still do a good job? You would lose your cool and go to that person and try to rip their tongue out of their mouth. I'm going to give you guys a little history lesson on what used to be in the contract for the African-American athlete in those days. There actually used to be a clause in their contract. It was called a behavior clause, where pretty much they could not lose their cool when people are up there saying racial epithets to them or throwing stuff at them or whatever. They had to keep their cool. So that clause was like in Jackie Robinson's contract and all of the other African-American athletes of those days. Isn't that crazy? Like, we have to behave ourselves because you're ignorant, because you're a dumbass. But those brothers, they did what they had to do. They were stronger men than me, I have to say, because I think I probably would have gotten kicked out first game. Anyway, he was a first black. I cannot find the date here. Oh, crap. Oh, man. Well, anyway, well, I'm going to put it to you like this. Fritz Pollard broke all kind of records, winning a mad games. But this is the crazy part about this. And I'm going to show you how history goes full circle. Beginning in 1934, there was an informal ban on black athletes largely campaigned by my favorite NFL team. And I love football. And I'm showing you guys, we love football. Everybody around the country is watching football right now. And I know my African-American loves football now. But my favorite team, the Washington Redskins owner, George Marshall, he's the one who headlined a boycott players in the NFL. Okay. Now, check this out. I'm sure this man's turned over his grade because in 1988, 25 years ago, the very first, like, so check this out. This man and his people tried to stop the very first black quarterback for achieving in the NFL. Then fast forward to 1988, the very first black quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl was Doug Williams, January 1988. And guess what team he played for, people? Guess what team he played for? The Washington Redskins. See what I'm saying? That's what I'm talking about. How we are as a people, we conquer any obstacle that they put in our way to stop us. But this is the problem that we do have in our community. We get past their boundaries, I mean their walls they put in front of us, but then we put our own walls in and kill ourselves. That's why we don't own baseball right now. I'm going to play another clip, and it has to do with the black quarterback. We talked about Doug Williams. We talked about Fritz Pollard, okay? And we talked about how they used to say the black quarterback could not be, wasn't smart enough to be a quarterback. But the owner of the Washington Redskins tried to stop the black quarterback. Years later, when he's rolled over his grave, Doug Williams, who played for his team, the Washington Redskins, was the first black quarterback to win the Super Bowl. That was 25 years ago. So I'm going to play this clip that has to do with the black quarterback, because once the black quarterback became the leader of the team, oh, the game has changed so much, i.e. Michael Vick. I'll be back in a second.
I think the quarterback situation, historically, because, football, pro football, is the sport, is become our national pastime. And the most unique leadership position in sports, I say globally, is the quarterback. The quarterback is invested with all the things which I think a lot of times white men see themselves as being. Courageous, smart, grace under pressure, all the things historically that white men and white people have used to define themselves is embodied in the quarterback position, which means what? Which means black folks can't play it. And of all the positions that we have taken over in mainstream sports, basketball, football, the one position, even in 2010, that continues to be tough is quarterback. And you mentioned Michael Vick and Cam Newton, Don Auburn. And I think that Vick always represented just a tradition-shattering person, because this guy was the great at any time, even now at age 30, he was the fastest person. He was probably the best athlete on the football field, including defensive backs and wide receivers. He was the fastest. He had a cannon of an arm, and just his whole approach to that position threatened to really change the orthodoxy of how it was played. And I think for that reason, a lot of people kind of resented him, the same reason in corporate America, they might resent an African-American leadership position or even in the White House. Now, so,
What's up? This is your man, Dwayne Abernathy. Michael Vick. Yes, I'm taking the time right now to talk about Michael Vick and talking about football. I love football. It is America's pastime now. I know my community loves football. But that quarterback position was a position that once a guy was a quarterback, he ran the team. Back in 1921, Frederick Douglass Fritz Pollard not only was a quarterback, 1921, we had black quarterbacks. We had black quarterbacks way back in 1921. Here was 1949, George Taffaro, I hope I said his name right, he played quarterback, came the second black quarterback in NFL history, okay? He played for the New York Giants, called the New York Yanks in 1950. But they shut us down. They shut us down. So they was like, look, oh, no, we're not having no black quarterbacks. As a matter of fact, they shut us out completely in the NFL. We didn't get back into the NFL. When was the year? Well, anyway, I don't remember the year that we got back in the NFL. I got another clip, but I'd rather tell you guys this live. The first NFL team that reinstated black players was the Cleveland Browns. Okay? Was the Cleveland Browns. But let's get back to Michael Vick. Michael Vick, just like in that clip, Michael Vick changed the sport of football because he was the essence and the epitome of the new model quarterback in the NFL. To history today, 2014, Michael, like I always tell you guys, when you're the pioneer and you're the first one, you're never going to be the one who gets all the praise, all the glory, or the money until you're dead and gone. I'm giving Michael Vick the praise and the glory right now while that man is still on this earth. Michael Vick changed the sport of football. He shattered the position of quarterback. Michael Vick was one of the best all-time athletes on that football field, and they knew it, so they had to shut him down. Okay, but this is what they left out, though. all those little young African-American brothers out there, even the little young white boys out there, look at Michael Vick, go, I want to be like him. Just like Michael Jordan did for basketball. They're like, I want to be like Michael Vick. And if you noticed, since Michael Vick's been in the league, there's been so many number sevens in the league, and there's so many players out there who play the style of Michael Vick, but not only do they play the style of Michael Vick, they're even better now because they can pass, and they're bigger, and they're stronger, and they're faster. And that's why we are getting our second African-American quarterback to win a Super Bowl. And he's only been in the NFL 2 years. 2 years, people. 2 years. You know what? In the final four of the NFL, the game to get to the, either way it goes, it would have been an African-American quarterback in today's Super Bowl. And this is the thing about tonight's game. This is the importance of the game. Because Peyton Manning, everybody loves Peyton Manning, but guess what? Peyton Manning is the last era of that style of quarterback. He's the last era of that style of quarterback. The torch is being passed tonight. The torch is being passed tonight for the new breed of quarterback that spawned from Michael Vick, baby. That's right. I'm giving the credit to Michael Vick. Russell Wilson will win the Super Bowl tonight because right now the score is 43-8 with 3 minutes to go. And guess what, people? That's how I'm ending my show tonight, the black quarterback. But we haven't come full circle. Yes, we're winning championships now. Yes, we have coaches now. We got our first black coach to win a Super Bowl. That was Coach Dungy. Of course, he was playing against Lovie Smith. Okay, we're starting to get our black coaches now. Oh, yeah, we're getting our African-Americans in the front office. But people still do not own ish. We need to get ownership. Now, I'll tell you guys one little secret if you did not know. I don't know if they still do. But I remember a few years ago, the Williams sisters, they own a partial ownership of the Miami Dolphins, you know. But just think about sports for a second. Just think about sports for a second. Every sport that you can think of, tennis, Athena Gibson, African-American sister, dominated the sport. The Williams sisters, tennis, dominated the sport. They tried to keep us out of tennis. Gibson came in. Golf, we had, Charles Sisford or something like that, 1940. I cannot think of his name. It's Charlie Sisford or something like that. But anyway, 1961, first black African-American man to be able to play in the PGA. They shut him out. Tiger Woods, I don't care what you say, brother. You don't want to claim us. I don't care. Tiger Woods came in, shut golf down. But that's what I'm trying to say. Every sport, every business venture, every educational, I don't know if that's the word, every education organization out there, once we get in, we dominate. But the problem is, my people, we do not own these things. We need to start owning, okay? But my message is tonight, the real African-American history is sports. We have a long way to go. We have conquered all the barriers that they have put in front of us as performers of the sports. Now we have to get into the back office of these sports. We have to now have more control of what's going on with these sports. So hopefully one day we might have an African-American owner of an NFL team. Well, this is your man, Dwayne. I'm going to take a break for a second. There's only 9 minutes left in the show tonight. The NFL ending at the same time. It's like it's perfect timing, baby. And history was made tonight. We made history tonight. You made history with your man, Dwayne, here on Yazza Radio tonight because Russell Wilson has just become the second African-American quarterback to win the Super Bowl.
I do, I'm young, vibrant. be forever. So I'ma live it up like that's true. You might wanna roll with me too. But I don't mean to brag, but I live a life that most can only dream about. Yeah. So baby, come be my dream girl. Pick up fantasy and let me work out. Yeah. Oh yeah. Tell me where you wanna go, what you wanna do. Say we living it like we own it, own it, own it. To the most top of the world, what I need is you. Say we living it like we own it, own it, own it, yeah. Never too much, so just let the drink flow. Later on you can come through. They should call you your highness and call me king, cause I'm that dude. All you gotta do is leave your crew. But I don't mean to brag, but I live a life that most can only dream about. Yeah. So baby, come be my dream girl. Pick up fantasy and let me work out. Yeah. Oh yeah. Tell me where you wanna go, what you wanna do. So we living it like we own it, own it, own it. Said I'm on top of the world, what I need is you. So we living it like we own it, own it, own it,
This is Dwayne Abernathy with 14 Generation Technical Services. In today's world, businesses need a video surveillance camera system. Some of the benefits of installing a camera system are they will improve safety, reduce shrinkage, reduce accidents, increase your bottom line, raise staff accountability, and give your customers a sense of peace. Here at 14 Generations, we specialize in new state-of-the-art technology cloud surveillance systems for restaurants, retail, lodging, offices, and we specialize in daycare centers. In addition to sales, we offer service, maintenance, training, and installation of these customized video surveillance systems. If you would like more information, please contact us at 888-751-8881. Once again, that's 888-751-8881, or log on to 14generations.com. That's the number 14 in the word generations. So once again, that's 14generations.com.
Living like we own it. I had to play that song during the break. We come to the end of the show. Super Bowl's over. Seahawks won 43-8. But I took us through this history of African-Americans in sports in America. We have overcome a lot of obstacles, okay? So I hope the lesson that was learned tonight, outside of us learning about people in sports that we didn't know about, but now we have to move forward. What is the next step for us in organized sports in this country, and that's ownership. We have to push together and start owning some of these sports that we dominate. I don't know what it takes because I'm not, like, in the sporting business, but I tell you one thing. If I'm going to invest my money in buying tickets, if I'm going to invest my money in buying jerseys and sneakers and all that other things that's a sport that supports the sporting industry, we need to find a way to start doing some form of ownership. So please, anyone out there who worked in the sporting industry, put the word out. Give us a game plan so we can start participating in ownership in these sports that we dominate. All right, you guys, that's tonight's show. Don't forget to tune in on Wednesday to check out Miss Nicole Lee's show. I believe her show is called Healthy 365. I'm trying to remember what she said her topic was for this week. I don't recall. It's on women's health, I believe, the health of the vagina. Very important show. Please check out that show Wednesday night. I will see you guys on Thursday, and hopefully I'll be back in the ATL by then. But God bless. Congratulations, Seattle, winning the Super Bowl tonight. And like I tell you guys all the time, knowledge is not power. The use of knowledge is power. This is your man, Dwayne, and I'm out.
Hello, this is Dwayne Abernathy with 14 Generation Technical Services. In today's world, businesses need a video surveillance camera system. Some of the benefits of installing a camera system are they will improve safety, reduce shrinkage, reduce accidents, increase your bottom line, raise staff accountability, and give your customers a sense of peace. Here at 14 Generations, we specialize in new state-of-the-art technology cloud surveillance systems for restaurants, retail, lodging, offices, and we specialize in daycare centers. In addition to sales, we offer service, maintenance, training, and installation of these customized video surveillance systems. If you would like more information, please contact us at 888-751-8881. Once again, that's 888-751-8881, or log on to 14generations.com. That's the number 14 in the word generations. So once again, that's 14generations.com.